This episode of the Potterverse is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. This is the last month where my famous 4D Epic Mascara is going to be on sale. It gives you the look of false lashes, really thick, full, and lush. If you have other mascara needs, maybe you live in a hot and humid community and you need waterproof mascara, I can still hook you up. Search that hashtag MinuteWithMary on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. You'll be able to connect with me there because I would love to help you feel more confident and creative. And since you're a podcast listener of ours, you can also head to MinuteWithMary.com/discount to grab your mascara at a discount. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated
to fly out my head.
I was like, what is that? Is that a hair? No, a bug burrowing a nest in my luscious mane. That was not magical. Hi, guys. This is a podcast dedicated to the book. Do you want me to re-say that so you can edit it?
Nope. We're going to keep it.
Here we go.
We're keeping it.
Let's pursue that flighty temptress adventure. I'm Mary Larson. Yeah, that happened, Blake. That happened. Wow.
Bugs flying around the studio, getting in Mary's hair, live on the internet.
It's just so funny because our son like hates this one fly that's been stuck in our house. And I've been telling him, like, don't worry about it. Flies don't want you. Flies don't want you. They just want your food, and the cat's probably going to eat it in a little bit. We can't let him ever know this. He's going to have nightmares about bugs being in his hair. Oh, good Lord, good Lord.
Dude, I am all out of sorts now. What a way to start that podcast.
Well,
we're
really, really excited to talk about this episode. A lot of stuff happens in this episode and yet, this chapter, and yet it's pretty straightforward for the most part. Like, things that are put into motion here, we're going to be talking a lot about in future episodes. Okay.
We're going to make that a GIF.
Oh, thank you.
You know that, right? Yeah, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. 2020 hitting you like,
Yeah, that's my reaction. 2020. Can I say something?
For those of you who are listening on the podcast app, please make sure you go to maryandblake.com to check out the video of what just happened, because it will be up. As a matter of fact, it may be a new Hall of Fame moment. I'm going to throw that up there.
Okay.
We're just going to do that. We're going to see what happens.
Sounds like a great thing. Not.
Sorry. All right. Go ahead. What do we got now? What do we got for the show?
Okay. So the title of this chapter is The Midnight Duel. Mm-hmm. And the quote that I would like to do for this chapter, it's a very simple quote. You know, I've been reading a bit, but I love this one. And I even love it in the movies. We could have all been killed, or worse, expelled by the Hermione Granger.
That's it. We could have been killed, or worse, expelled.
Mm-hmm. She knows where her priorities are at. Not in the book, but in the movies. But let me tell you, we get a lot of information about the core characters of this series in this chapter. I mean, I'd say like the core five are pretty outlined very, very well in this chapter. And it does seem like a simple...
By core five, what do you mean?
I mean, Harry, Ron, Hermione, Neville, and Malfoy.
Okay. All right.
So we get to see a lot of their personalities, a lot about how they're going to interact with each other, a lot about how they perceive each other, and some of those perceptions may be wrong. And it may take multiple books to break that down, but it is a very, very fun chapter.
All right. Ready to get into the rest of this show?
I am.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Once again, I don't know what I'm supposed to say right now because I can't read the Google Doc. There we go.
Oh, crap. We were supposed to do...
Blake, I'm telling you, man.
Listen, I got 40 million things going on here. I'm trying to be the director of the show.
I've asked if I could be the sound engineer, and you say you won't share the
responsibilities
with me. Absolutely
not. That is my job.
So, if you won't let me take any of the reins, I'm just going to keep sitting here. Okay, so.
She's sitting there pointing at something. I have no idea what she's pointing at.
We also wanted to remind you
this podcast has been an S show.
Okay, careful. Well, we wanted to remind you to hit that subscribe button on this podcast, even if you watch us live on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. We would love for you to hit the subscribe button on your podcast app of choice. You can also follow us on social media by searching Mary and Blake. You can head to maryandblake.com to find other podcasts and blogs. And we would love it if this brings any joy to your life whatsoever to head on over to jointhenerdclan.com. It's the same thing as outlandercastclan.com. It's where you can contribute as little as $2 a month to help keep this podcast going. So here we go. Let's get into this show. So this chapter, would you like to do a synopsis or would you like me to?
I would love for you to do it.
You pretty much always do, don't you?
I do.
Okay, so flying lessons. This is the first time that with the kids in the books get to ride their brooms. They get to hang out with Madam Hooch. Of course, Neville, being just the poor little clumsy fella that he is, he falls off his broom. Harry and Draco get into a little bit of a tat about Neville's remembrall. Through it, Harry jumps on his broom.
What do they get into? A tat?
Yeah, is it a word?
I don't think so.
Why don't you Google it? I feel like I would have totally used that in Scattergories. Or what's that one? Scrabble?
Scrabble, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, probably would not earn points for that one. Okay, so while they're in that little tiff, that's what I'm trying to say. There we go. Harry gets spotted by Professor McGonagall for flying around. She takes him to go meet Oliver Wood, who was such a hunk in the movies when I was younger. He gets to be the youngest seeker in a century on the team. And then all the while, they get into this fight that never happens between him and Draco. This is taking forever. I know.
Play in the plane, Helen.
Okay. And they end up being set up and they run around and they end up seeing this three-headed dog and they're like, what the heck is going on?
We're getting a bunch of different ones. Spat. You basically combined tiff and spat and you got tat.
It's one of my many talents.
Yeah, it actually is. It's you did a great job.
I especially loved it when I would do it on live television and I would just make up a word. And the people who I would talk with, they would just roll with it because they were like, wow, she said that so confidently. It must really be a word.
Yeah, like, that's a thing. It's got to be a thing, right?
Nope.
Clearly, obviously.
I made it up. All right. So here we go. So that is the synopsis for this chapter.
Yep.
So let's start off kind of just moment by moment because there's three big things that happen here.
We're going to start at the beginning.
It's a very good place to start.
There you go.
We start off actually not really doing much except Harry just thinking about how much he hates Malfoy. How he never thought that he could hate someone and feel as badly about someone as he did Dudley, but he does for Malfoy. And it's pretty interesting because, of course, like, Malfoy is a twit. You know what I mean? He's
not a tat, but a twit.
Not a tat, twit. You know, once again, I'm going to firmly say that I believe that this is because of his upbringing. And that 11-year-old probably could have changed his mind maybe if he decided to be friends with Potter and Weasley rather than just stick to his own crew. But whatevs. But Harry just pegs him. You know what I mean? I mean, Malfoy has done nothing but be poor and poorly treat others. But Harry just kind of melds him into this Dudley image in his mind. And I'll be honest with you, Dudley holds up to that image in this chapter, right? Mm-hmm. So the first thing we do is we get to see the flying practice, right? Or is that the remembrall? First, the remembrall. So we get to have that moment where he takes Neville's remembrall. Can we have a moment?
Sure. What do you got?
Remembralls. Let's just digest what a useless magical device that is. You forgot something. You forgot it.
You ain't gonna remember it if it tells you forgot it.
No, like how many people were like Neville and they were like, it was like the Furby. I bet it was like the present of the year, like when Furbies were really big and everyone's like, gotta get a Furby. And then everyone gets a Furby and they're like, this sucks. Like, this did not enrich my life.
Or like Tickle Me Elmo. Like, I was out on Tickle Me
Elmo.
What's
like a device that was meant to help people, but really it's just a nuisance?
Tamagotchi.
No, that's a toy. What's a device? Like, this remember was supposed to help people. And are there things that you're like, this is not useful, but more of just like a paperweight because it has not helped me?
That's a good question.
Maybe our friends on Facebook can weigh on in. But really, like, you get a Remember-All to remember things. At least the Remember-All could, like, come up with a word and say you forgot to put on your socks.
Yeah, it would say, like, socks or feet.
Yeah, it just turns red and makes you feel even worse because you don't even remember what it was that you forgot. Goodness gracious. So the Gryffindors and Slytherins have to head on off to flying practice with Madame Hooch, who, honestly... Madame Hooch is a teacher of the 80s. This book series takes place in the 90s. Madame Hooch doesn't have helmets on her kids. Nope. This series was obviously not written in 2020. Can you imagine if the author had to write this series right now, the editors would be like, 11-year-olds flying around, that's a little dangerous. Everyone's mandated to wear helmets right now, so you might want to add that in. Madame Hooch doesn't care.
I love when she's like, oh, a broken wrist. Come on, boy, it's all right. Up you get.
Doesn't even call him his name.
Come on, boy. Up you get.
I'll get you a tang. You'll feel better in a jiffy.
You're good. Get some...
You're not bleeding.
Get some tussin on there. Right? You'll be fine.
Madame Hooch. I honestly think that's why she walks Neville to the infirmary, because she could have Wingardium Leviosa'd him.
She could have done literally anything.
She could have done Arresto Momentum on him. Okay, there are plenty of spells that even I, a mere muggle, know of that could have stopped Neville from breaking his wrist.
Caitlin Marie on Facebook says shake weight.
I may or may not have purchased a shake weight. It actually did work.
Just like that. A winner.
It did work.
Yeah, it worked all right.
But, yeah, shake weight. There you go. A Casio Electronic Library. See, I feel like that was like the forerunner to a Palm Pilot.
Yeah,
you know?
Or the Newton. Remember the Newton from Apple?
No.
That was like the, it was like, it was kind of like a Palm Pilot, but okay. The Newton was like the first little entry into the
electronic device note-taking thing.
Yes.
Very cool. So Gryffindors and Slytherins have flying practice class together.
And
good
I also,
luck, Madame Hooch.
I also want to go on Madame Hooch with this when she says, none of you is to move while I take this boy to the hospital wing.
This boy.
You leave those brooms where they are, or you'll be out of Hogwarts before you can say Quidditch. Come on, dear.
Madame Hooch chills at the three broomsticks.
Doesn't her daily. F's account? Her F's account is on overdraft.
She is just all set with her job, you know? I mean,
I feel like she's the gym teacher with, like, the tracksuit.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, she's been there for, like, 30 years. Yeah. And she does the same thing every year. She
rubs some dirt in it, toughen you up.
Get in there. Get some spit on it. You'll be fine.
Yeah. And through this, of course, Malfoy grabs the useless Remember-All, which, to be honest, he should have just thrown away. Like, Harry, you don't need to save that. It's worthless. But Harry jumps on his broom right away. Now, this is Harry who was afraid that he was going to fail. Mm-hmm. I mean, Harry's been told his entire life that he's worthless, that he's not smart. He even went to Hogwarts being nervous because he didn't know anything about the wizarding world. And he was very nervous for flying practice, as were a lot of his classmates. Hermione was wicked nervous because she could just read about it, but it's not like that.
Right.
Malfoy was bragging. Ron, of course, had some experience with flying around on his brother's broomsticks. But when the moment happened where they had to stay up to their brooms, the broom quickly went into Harry's hand.
Absolutely. And I love this. I love this moment because it is a moment for Harry's magicality to come through, where he actually, that's the one thing that's come to him naturally. Like, that is on his own. Yes, he's been brave. He stood up for Ron. Yes, he has a bunch of money that he's able to spend on something from the trolley. What was it again?
Anything from the trolley.
Yeah, all the
but in a book. Anything from the cart.
It just doesn't have the same ring. But he has all the money to spend on that stuff. Those are all external things.
Yeah.
That happen because of stuff around him. But this is the first thing that is his, and it is a nod to his eventual excellence with a broom, mm-hmm. but also that he is meant to fly. He is meant to be on brooms. This is something that connects him ultimately to his father that becomes really important.
Yeah, I mean, McGonagall says to him, like, your dad was a great Quidditch player. I loved reading it, how Harry just knew how to move on the broom. It just responded to him so beautifully. And, you know, you think about how some people just get sports.
Yes,
so this
absolutely
leads me to a question, Blake. Yep. How would you have done on your first day in flying practice?
My first initial gut was to say I would have smoked it. I would have been awesome. Mm. But I'm horribly afraid of heights. So, nope, I would have been bad. I would have been terrible. Like, I can't even look like over the railing in our deck. Never mind beyond.
You're already like 6'4"?
I'm already 6'4" and I hate heights.
Yeah.
I hate it. How would you do?
I think I'd be really good at it.
You think you'd be good at it?
I do.
Okay, how come?
I think it's all about believing in yourself.
Yeah.
I think it really is all about believing in yourself. Well, not really, because then probably a lot of people would have been good flyers, but I believe I would have been great. Truth be told, I probably would end up like Harry in the movies with the broom just smacking me in my face because I have terrible depth perception. Mm-hmm. I would like to think that I'd be good at it.
You would not be a good snitch catcher.
I can't see.
Yeah, you would absolutely be a terrible...
I wanted to be a beater.
You would not be a good beater.
Why not?
Because that beater would be coming at you and you'd have to hit it and...
I can hit big balls. I played volleyball.
That's what she said.
I played volleyball.
You can hit what?
You know what I just said.
The other thing that's coming at play here also is the tension between Harry and Draco. Harry is breaking the rules that Madame Hooch sets up immediately, which is already meant to break. You know, as soon as a teacher says, hey, don't do this, you know all the students, when they're not around.
Especially when you have a Gryffindor-Slytherin mixed class. Like, right. It's not like it's Slytherin and Hufflepuffs, and the Hufflepuffs would be like, guys, I don't think that's a really good idea.
Right.
Like, we need to... Madame Hooch is a nice teacher. Like, let's not do this. Or the Ravenclaws being like, we're not leaving this school.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not doing anything.
Oh, no. You guys are on the brooms. We're here with our books.
I'm going to my locker to get my books. I'll be right back.
Slytherins. Don't care.
So he...
Gryffindors. Don't really care.
Malfoy busts balls for the sake of busting balls. And he just does it to get a rise, I think, out of Harry. Just because that's what he's doing. And Harry has no problem to act confidently, even though he's breaking a rule, because it's for the greater good. And the tension between the two, Malfoy's overconfidence and Malfoy's ability to piss people off, how that's running in tandem and against Harry's courage and Harry's willingness and need to stand up for his friends. And to stand up for himself. So that when Malfoy says, or when Harry says, you ain't got Crab McGoyle up here, do you?
Oh,
it's not a coincidence that Malfoy says, oh, crap, I can't do anything up here. And this kid just tooled me on this broom.
That he's never ridden before because he lived in a muggle house.
Right, right. And there's this great passage that I absolutely need to read. This was my favorite part of this whole chapter.
Okay.
Give it here, Harry yelled. But Malfoy had leapt on his broomstick and taken off. He hadn't been lying. He could fly well. Hovering level with the topmost branches of an oak, he called, come on, get it, Potter! Harry grabbed his broom. No, shouted Hermione Granger. Madame Hooch told us not to move. You'll get us all into trouble.
Or better worse.
Expelled. Harry ignored her. Blood was pounding in his ears. He mounted the broom and kicked hard against the ground, and up, up, up he soared. Air rushed through his hair, and his robes whipped out behind him. And in a rush of fierce joy, he realized he'd found something he could do without being taught. This was easy. This was wonderful. He pulled his broomstick up a little to take it even higher and heard screams and gasps of girls back on the ground and an admiring whoop from Ron.
Of course Ron would hoop.
Ron's all about the hooping life.
But see, this is why I chose that one simple sentence that Hermione said. This entire chapter, Harry makes pretty reckless decisions, you know, brave in many regards, but reckless that could have gotten him expelled. He could have gotten in severe trouble for flying. He could have gotten in severe trouble for being out at night. And of course, the situation with the three-headed dog. But here we are. And he's flying.
I just love the imagery here. Blood was pounding in his ears. And the and he mounted the broom, and the air rushed through his hair, and his robes whipped out from behind him. And in a rush of fierce joy, think of that wording, fierce joy. It's not just joy. It's not gleeful joy. It is fierce joy. It's something that is visceral and almost it borders anger level, and it borders detriment.
That's so joyful, so strong.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's so strong that it borders bad. It borders like the thing that makes you question whether or not you're doing something. It's fierce. I just find that so descriptive and viable as a descriptor. And then following it up with, this was easy. And then in italics, this was wonderful. Something full of wonder. Something that is beyond Harry's recognition. It is innate. It is something that is in his blood. And that makes his blood boil in his ears. And all I could think of, Mary, was you.
Oh.
When I was thinking about this. Because I know that there has been times when you could feel the blood pounding in your ears because you are an absolute Gryffindor to the bone. And all I could think of is you doing this and thinking, wow, that is exactly Mary. Have you ever been in a situation where blood is pounding in your ears?
Yep. Yep.
Care to elaborate?
No.
Fair enough.
So another Gryffindor catches Harry. It's Professor McGonagall.
Excellent stuff.
And, you know, he, for quite some time, is afraid that he's actually going to get in trouble. Because, of course, all the words that have described Professor McGonagall before this moment have been stern and rigid and like a serious rule follower. And she goes to Professor Quirrell's room and asks for wood. And Harry thinks that she's getting wood like a cane to beat him. Now, I came across, during one of my bouts of insomnia, the most amazing fan fiction. It's not the most amazing, but an amazing fan fiction to come across during this chapter. It was about, fan fiction, of course, is just like a canon offshoot thing. I need to take a moment to talk about this. It was how Minerva McGonagall, once again, this is all fiction, not from the book. Minerva McGonagall was having dreams that something was wrong with Harry Potter. And like Lily and James Potter would go to her in her dreams and say, like, you need to go check up on our boy. And she would ask Dumbledore, like, is he okay? And Dumbledore's like, yeah, whatever. I check up on him all the time. He's fine. And Minerva ends up sneaking over in Muggle clothes. Oh, and she like says something to Severus, like, I'm having these weird dreams and Dumbledore won't tell me where he lives. And Severus ends up telling her.
Oh.
And she goes over and she finds Harry like in the cupboard. He's only like three and he's like peed himself and he's obviously very poorly treated. She ends up taking him in and adopting him, and it causes a big rift between her and Dumbledore. And actually Snape ends up helping her a lot while she's co-teaching, and she ends up raising Harry. And she loves Quidditch, and obviously he gets really fond of Quidditch, and he's really good at Quidditch because, of course, Minerva was like a Quidditch player in her heyday and could have played professionally. But it's this whole idea about how she never got to have a kid of her own, and her mothering instinct, but also her like maternal instinct in general, told her that something was wrong with Harry. So she ended up raising him in Hogwarts and gave him a life that he deserved as just a human, as a human, but also as the
And this was a fanfic?
Yes, complete with pictures.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Including the fact that she and Severus Snape at the end of each year would wear colors of whoever won the Quidditch World Cup. So there was a picture of like Severus pouting and she and Severus, and she was smiling and she was wearing like maroon and he was wearing maroon. And then another picture of her pouting and Severus was like wicked happy and they were both in green. It was an amazing piece of fan fiction just because it wasn't like incredibly well written, but it just, it hit me in this chapter. Because Minerva, who's always been said to be stern and so like, not a rule breaker. She breaks a massive rule. She sees a first year riding a broom. And instead of giving him detention, instead of reprimanding him, instead of expelling him, she loves Quidditch so much, but also has a soft spot for an orphaned Harry Potter.
Sure.
That she breaks a rule. There hasn't been a first-year Quidditch player in a century. Mm-hmm.
Never mind a seeker.
Yeah.
Of all things. You know, it's absolutely interesting because you're right, Mary. McGonagall is... You take her as someone who is the very by the book, yeah, like person who is going to keep things in line, and rules are what keep things in line. Mm-hmm. Yet she breaks this rule for Harry, or she bends the rules, as she says it. I would love to know your opinion on why she bends the rules. I know we kind of just got into it a little bit, but I would love for you to...
I think I just had like a 5-minute monologue about it.
I know, but fan fiction. Yeah, sure. But no, why? I want you to amplify on a little bit for me.
I think because she's always going to have a soft spot in her heart for Harry Potter, the boy who she met a year old. A scar in his head as his parents were killed, and how terrible she feels that he's being left at that doorstep. But also, Minerva McGonagall is a diehard Quidditch fan, okay?
And she's the head of Gryffindor, too.
And the head of Gryffindor. And this, my friends, this, I think, is the one most important piece of evidence as to why Minerva McGonagall is a Gryffindor and not a Ravenclaw, because she breaks some rules because she wants to win.
Oh, yeah. She wants. And, you know, the other thing that comes into play here, too, is the fact that she knows that James Potter was a seeker as well. I mean, we don't know that yet as readers, but she
no,
does.
No, in the books, he's a chaser.
No, I thought he was a seeker.
I think he's a seeker in the movie, but I think he's actually a chaser in the books.
Well, if that's the case, then I apologize. But regardless... She knows that James Potter was some sort of positional player in Quidditch, and thereby Harry must have some sort of predilection for Quidditch and giving her the ability to win. And it also fits narratively nice, too. I mean, you know, the father played it and everything, and it's just that much more of a connection for Harry to his dad. And these are the subtle ways that we're learning about his dad that make him so very similar.
And how much more does that make Harry want to be exceptional at Quidditch? You know, you think about particularly men, they look up to their dads, and if their dads played a sport or went to a certain school or cheered for certain sports teams, like oftentimes, you know, they want to emulate that and kind of copy that same behavior. And so here's Harry, who didn't necessarily get to go to the Quidditch World Cup with his dad, but he knows that his dad played and he knows he's good at it too. So you've got, like you said, this like Potter in him where it's like, I'm going to prove that I'm a Potter and I'm going to kick some booty.
Mm-hmm.
So he ends up getting, of course, put on the team. He's telling his friends all of this. He's very excited, but they're kind of keeping it on the DL because they want it to be quite the surprise. And in the meantime, too, Malfoy comes up and says, let's have a midnight duel. And all I can think of, the 10 duel commandments.
Good job. Good job. I got to find it now because I don't have it ready to go. So what are you doing to me, Mary? You got to let me know.
Sorry.
When these things are coming up.
This is why I should be the sound engineer.
No. Here comes the General Washington. There you go.
There you go, Blake.
That's your Hamilton reference.
And Ron quickly fills Harry in. And thank goodness for Ron. Ron may not be as apt on a broom, mm-hmm, but Ron knows wizards talk.
Karen says the author has said that James was a chaser.
Oh,
so
yay.
There you go. Okay. Ron is great here, too, because he knows that Harry is in over his head when it comes to being a wizard and
yes,
having a duel and not even knowing what a duel does. And... And I love that moment when Harry says, what's a second?
Oh my gosh, we need to rewrite the lyrics to the 10 Dual Commandments
you
for Harry Potter.
You can do that.
I totally will.
And
to go along with my crazy by moaning Wordle.
That is absolutely a Patreon thing.
He drives me crazy.
No, you can't give away the goods.
I'm on the brink. I saw a basilisk in the sink.
Mary rewrote that song. To Moaning Myrtle. That is an absolute truth. I will say this. If we get to 500 patrons, that here it is.
Join the nerdclan.com.
Go to jointhenerdclan.com. If we get 500 patrons, I will make public Mary's rewritten Moaning Myrtle song for Britney Spears.
We never recorded the Sirius Black
No,
one.
We did not.
Dead or alive or petrified.
You are such a dork.
Nerd!
Oh my god. Okay. All right. So
the 10 dual commandments.
Yeah, Ron.
Number one.
Ron is backing up Harry. And I love when Ron says, yeah, you know, I'm the second in case you die, but you ain't going to die because the most you're going to do is just shoot sparks at him. And he just has Harry's back.
Will it make a little sound?
Yeah. You know?
Swish and flick. I'm 2 weeks into my training.
So they go on their way and something else happens here. And we forget that Hermione, by the way, is still being called Hermione Granger. She's not just being called Hermione throughout these chapters. So the author is telling you that there's still a distance between Hermione and Ron and Harry.
And Harry, yeah.
But the author also does something that's really important here. She puts the three of them together in an organic way, for the most part. I hate when authors or showrunners or writers force relationships on you. It has to happen naturally. It has to give oomph to it. It can't mm-hmm. exist for the sake of existing. It has to give a reason to care, and it has to give a reason to exist. What does each member of the friendship bring to the friendship? For example, Harry brings...
the fact that he's a chosen one.
He's the chosen one. Ron brings the support and care and knowledge.
Ron brings the fact... Yeah, the knowledge. The wizard knowledge.
Yeah. And Hermione is the one who brings the practicality and the specialness of magic into all of it. And we finally get that in this chapter, but it starts off in this really peculiar way. And what happens is... Hermione is saying, listen, you can't go. Like, you're going to go and they're going to lose all these points that I got for knowing about switching spells. And Ron says, go away. And Hermione says, all right, but I warned you. You just remember that when I said, when you're on the train home tomorrow, you're so... But what they were, they didn't find out. Hermione had turned to the portrait of the fat lady to get back inside and found herself facing an empty painting. The fat lady had gone on a nighttime visit, and Hermione was locked out of Gryffindor Tower. Now what am I going to do? She asked shrilly. That's your problem, said Ron. We've got to go. We're going to be late. And they hadn't even reached the end of the corridor when Hermione caught up with them. And notice, it wasn't until she makes the choice to go with them that the author starts writing just Hermione and not Hermione Granger.
Mm.
And she says, I'm coming with you. You are not, said Ron. Do you think I'm going to stand out here and wait for Filch to catch me? If he finds all three of us, I'll tell him the truth, that I was trying to stop you, and you can back me up. I love this.
Yes.
Because Hermione is doing something that she doesn't want to do, but she has no other choice. So she has to make a choice. Sit there and get caught by Filch, or get caught by Filch with all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And she chooses to be with all three of them, knowing that it's probably the right thing to do is be with them.
You know, it's interesting. In these early chapters, Harry is not a big fan of Hermione either. All Hermione does in these earlier chapters is pretty much reprimand Harry. Yes, Ron and she get into, you know, little tiffs every once in a while. But really, she just keeps telling Harry, you shouldn't do that. You really shouldn't do that. I've earned us so many points recently. And if you do this, you're going to lose all the points that I earned for us. How dare you? And Harry doesn't ever butt in when Ron's putting her down. Mm-hmm. Whereas also, I think that Ron is very quick to put her down because Ron is a child in a very large family and he has learned to stand up for himself and not take any crap. So right. Here he is being bothered, quote unquote, by Hermione. And maybe it kind of reminds him of Ginny. Leave us alone. Go away. We don't want you here. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously very mean to say. These are 11-year-old children, of course. But how many 11-year-old boys have probably said that to their 10-year-old sister? So I think that, like, Ron just sees her as this annoying girl who keeps harboring on her. And then they bump into Neville. So this, of course, is another difference from the movies. In the movies, they're not heading to this midnight duel. They stumble over Neville, who they think is Mrs. Norris, because they just hear, like, a little sniffling. And Neville forgot the password. So the four of them go to the trophy room. And Malfoy set them up. Okay, so Filch and Mrs. Norris go in there.
Yeah, that's one thing. One of the questions I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Just for clarification, does Malfoy set them up?
Malfoy set them up. Malfoy said, oh, sure, I'll meet you in the trophy room at midnight, when, of course, students are not allowed out in the castle.
And before we get into that, actually, too, the way that the author brings in Neville into this into this group is really important, too. He says, I've been out here for hours. I couldn't remember the new password to get in bed, which is playing off of the remember all, which happened earlier in the chapter. Keep your voice down, Neville. The password's pig snout, but it won't help you now because the fat lady's gone off somewhere. And fine, said Neville, showing them his arm. Good. Well, look, Neville, we've got to be somewhere. We'll see you later. And Neville says, don't leave me, scrambling to his feet. I don't want to stay out here alone. The Bloody Baron's been passed twice already. It shows you his character immediately. Poor Neville has already been hurt a bunch of times. And
forgetful,
and he's scared. He's such a scared little kid. And when eventually in book three we get to know that his true fear is Snape, you believe it because he's scared of the Bloody Baron.
Yes,
excellent stuff.
So they head on over to the trophy room, and as I said, Malfoy has just kind of like set him up. They bump into Peeves, who we've gotten to see several times the past couple of chapters. And he bothers McGonagall on her way to find Oliver Wood. He's bothering the kids here. And they're just saying, like, leave us alone, Peeves. And he's the one that ends up yelling, students out of bed. And he gets them in trouble. And Mrs. Norris and Filch, by the way, worst searchers ever. Like, four kids in there. You didn't see them, like, run away from you? You couldn't turn on a light or something? I have no idea. Mrs. Norris is obviously not a good search dog. But speaking of dogs, the kids are running away. They run and run and run, trying just to get back to the Gryffindor common room. And in the meantime, they get to the third floor corridor. And they're trying to run away from Mrs. Norris and Filch. And there's this door that all it needed was a simple aloha mora to, and four first-year children stumble into this room. Can I just say?
Yep.
Dumbledore, if you're trying to lock a room that could lead to a certain death, like, why just lock it with something as simple as an aloha mora can unlock? Mm. First years, learn that.
Well, this is a question that I have to ask you, because the way that the author writes this, I know I've read a lot today, but there's a lot of great writing in here that needs to be called out. Run, Harry yelled at the four of them, sprinting down the gallery, not looking back to see whether Filch was following. They swung around the doorpost and galloped down one corridor and then another, Harry in the lead without any idea where they were or where they were going. They ripped through a tapestry and found themselves in a hidden passageway, hurtled along it, and came out near the charms classroom, which they knew was miles from the trophy room. This is really important because in the last chapter, we established that Hogwarts is an ever-changing, ever-breathing character.
Yes.
And Harry is running and running and running, not knowing where he's running through tapestries. He's going into these abandoned corridors, no idea where he's going. And it just so happens, are you telling me that they just happen to go or at least end up in the room that the Sorcerer's Stone is going to be under the guard of a three-headed dog? No fracking chance. Listen, I'm wearing my Outlander cast shirt right now, and especially in season three, one thing that really bothered me was that things happened because the narrative needed them to happen. Jamie got shipwrecked near an island, and wouldn't you know, it just happened to be the island that Claire was stranded on talking to coconuts. It was really lazy writing, in my opinion. But the DNA of the text here in Harry Potter suggests that more is happening at Hogwarts. It's almost as if Hogwarts wants Harry to find the Sorcerer's Stone. And we already have that indication from the text when Dumbledore himself was saying, don't go into that corridor. Don't go into that room, the third floor, because if you do, it's going to be out of bounds. It's going to be problems.
So, conspiracy theory. Dumbledore, of course, wanted Harry to be on the third floor corridor and to see the dog. Dumbledore actually had Hagrid pick up something from that from Gringotts the same day that he had Harry. He couldn't have had Harry Hagrid do it the day before or the day after or any other time that he's in London. He had to do it with Harry in tow. Oh, while you're at Gringotts, I want you to also go to the super secret thing in front of Harry Potter. Exactly. These staircases can change. So some conspiracy theorists in the Harry Potter fandom think that exactly, that these staircases were led to have Harry stumble upon that. And that's why the door was able to be opened with something as simple as a Lohomora, which a first-year student could figure out.
Absolutely. So it feels as if Harry is being guided by Hogwarts. Something,
or Dumbledore.
Or Dumbledore. But or maybe they're one and the same, right? Maybe Dumbledore is maneuvering Hogwarts to his liking, to his need, right? I mean, the guy's the most powerful wizard on the planet.
He's trying to trap Voldemort.
Yes.
And he knows, cover your ears for spoilers, he knows that neither can live while the other is alive.
Right, exactly.
So he knows he needs to get Harry and Voldemort together.
And that's how, you have to question that throughout this entire series.
Yes.
Things happen to Harry. Later on in, was it book 5, or at least in movie 5, Harry says, yeah, I did all these things, but I kind of lucked out. These things happened around me. I got all this aid from all these people. It's not just because people really liked him or he just happened to get lucky. You have to look back on it now and question the validity of how much Harry is in control of what he's doing. And I don't think it is a coincidence that he ends up on what they say in the text is miles away from the trophy room. You know, the thing that connects him to his dad.
I mean, I think they were exaggerating.
Well, you know what I mean. But what I'm saying is he ends up on the other side of the school, let's say. I think it's fitting that the chapter begins with Harry discovering that he can fly and he can do all these great things. And it as it relates to Quidditch, yet at the end of the chapter, we're separating ourselves from that. We're separating ourselves from the trophy room. We're separating ourselves from his dad, who is in the trophy room as a Quidditch player. This is his
own path.
It's his own journey. Yes, yeah. Quidditch is important. It's what his dad did, but this is the beginning of his own path.
So, you know, that of course concludes the chapter, and then Hermione's like, I'm going to bed because you guys are doing nothing but trouble this entire chapter. And once again, it's very interesting that this chapter is titled The Midnight Duel, which really never happened. Malfoy said, let's have a midnight duel, and then he never showed up. But what's cool about this title is that we as the reader think that there's going to be a midnight duel. We think that this is what's important.
The misdirection's great.
But really what is important is Harry has this innate ability to be an excellent flyer, and Harry sees the three-headed dog and puts pieces together that maybe what was stolen Gringotts is underneath there.
Dare I say it's Star Wars-esque, the Duel of the Fates? Ooh. Oh, yes! So, why do you think they did not include this part in the film?
They didn't need it.
You didn't need
meaning,
it?
Meaning, what part in the film? Meaning the midnight duel. Yeah, they didn't need it.
Because they already set Malfoy up in the Quidditch practice, or the flying class as the person who's going to be opposing Harry.
Yeah, they needed the midnight duel to once again solidify that Draco and Harry are trying to fight, that Draco's just trying to get him in trouble. But what the author needed was a reason for Harry to be running around the school and accidentally end up in the corridor.
Yep, got it. All right, you want to take another perspective?
Are you first?
I got one.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to do Filch.
Awesome.
Filch.
Awesome.
Just doing his job, man. Just doing his job. Trying to go out there, protect the kids, make sure they're all in bed. Yeah, he's a dink. Yeah, he could probably go about doing things better. But man's being paid. Man's being paid to do a job by Dumbledore. And all he's trying to do is fulfill it. He's getting these words from Malfoy, and he's already heard all this crap about Harry. He already probably thinks the same way that Snape does. Harry sucks. Harry sucks because he thinks he's awesome. And he thinks he's awesome because he's the chosen one. So that kid can go around doing whatever the hell he feels like. No. I'm going to get him. I know they're around here somewhere. I'm just doing my job. Screw them. I don't blame them. Go run after them kids. Get them back in their beds. God forbid one of them falls and breaks a wrist. Just like Neville did earlier. God forbid one of them goes into a room they're not supposed to get into and gets eaten by a three-headed dog with six eyes. What are we talking about? Of course he's going to run after them.
Agreed.
He's just trying to do the best that he can.
I love it.
What do you got? Anything for you?
Hermione.
What do you got?
Hermione, otherwise known as Hermione Granger this entire time because she wasn't being seen as an equal, nor is she truly a friend yet. The poor thing. Her entire life, she knew she was smart, but probably wasn't able to piece things together. She finally feels like this is the place for her to blossom. You know, she was probably made fun of as like being nerdy, mm-hmm. only child of dentists, maybe her parents, you know, would show her teeth. I don't know what dentists do. I'm not going to lie. but she's here to do something really, really cool. And she's proud of the fact. And she studied and she did all these things. And she is stuck with these dopes. And I got to tell you, there was a boy in my life who may or may not have stopped me from saying I pledge of allegiance for 2 years, who I had to sit next to from kindergarten through eighth grade, who was a friend of mine, but was like the biggest doofus and would talk all the time and would like try to make fart sounds all the time. And I had to sit next to him because our names left like literally one letter difference at the end. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, exactly. So I know what it's like to be this high achieving woman who just can't with these immature boys, you know, like, please, can I please hang out with people who are like 10 years older than them? Because I'm here to learn. I'm here to be great. I'm here to do awesome things. And these people are going to lose me house points. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do group activities with them. And yet I'm stuck in a group activity year long called house points. So yes. Hermione Granger, in this chapter, is telling them, please stop. Please, please don't fly.
Yeah.
It's not safe.
You're risking everything here.
Literally, Madam Hooch is probably just going to like take a cigarette and burn it on your hand or something that like a 70s or 80s teacher would do. I don't even know. She looks cray cray. You know, like we just don't know what's going to happen with her. Please don't do a midnight duel. That's a terrible idea. A terrible idea. Like she's really trying to look out for them. She could just ignore them and let them get expelled. And then has to get caught up in this mess, chased by Filch, midnight, gets to see a scary dog. No wonder she wants to go to bed and stay away from these boys.
Oh, man. Kate's saying, yes, it's so hard being the smart girl in middle school. Victoria says, I've never understood Hermione and Ron. Denise says, Mary is such a Gryffindor for sure. Allie says, it's the biggest group project ever.
Yes. Seriously.
I don't do group projects. I don't do them.
When I was reading this, and I hope you're all are. When I was reading this moment where she was like, I just earned all these points and you're going to lose it. I was thinking about people who are like, can you please just wear a mask so our kids can go to school? I don't care if you like it or not, but I just want my kids to go to school. Like that's what I was feeling.
Suzanne says that Hermione is such a fun sucker. Oh, my God. Tammy actually says, from Harry's point of view, Hermione is a pest. But from Hermione's point of view, the boys are such doofuses.
That was the same boy in my life that told me that I was going to be an excellent wife someday. He's like, nobody wants to date you now, but I bet you'll be a great wife
get
someday.
Get that kid out of here.
Blake, he didn't stop me from saying a Pledge of Allegiance. He's out of here.
That's
trust
true.
Me.
Good point.
Nobody said I'd be a great wife. Hopefully I am a great wife.
Yep. All right.
Sounded like that was a real yep.
What?
I just asked you, am I a great wife? And you went, yep.
No, you are. You're a great wife. You're incredible. You're the best wife. Best of wives, best of women.
Okay. Let's go on. Yeah. Oh,
by the way, just because I have to now. Yeah, you're welcome, America. Here comes the general to Washington. That's my girl. All right. We got some emails and questions, although we don't have any emails. So if you guys do have any questions, I'm surprised we don't have any emails for this episode. So if you do have questions, now is the time to get them into the live feed.
Send us an email in regards to next chapter, please.
Yes,
it's Halloween. It's like where things get real. This is also the moment in the movie where I pushed up. I let our kids watch up to Halloween.
They are
5 and 7. And then I stop it.
Melissa asks, did anyone else mispronounce Hermione until the movies? For some reason, she said Hermoine.
It was a common thing until people maybe heard it in audiobooks. Mm-hmm. So you were not alone.
I would have said Hermione.
Yeah, a lot of people would have said that too.
Yep, that's what I would have said.
Yes. Okay, well, why don't you come up with a quick question? I asked before, how would you think if you were flying? And do you have any questions?
Would you have done the Midnight Duel?
Depends with who. I mean,
if it was Draco, all things in a vacuum here, would you just switch places with?
I mean,
if
it was my arch nemesis, I would. But I did chicken out of a fight in high school.
Yes, you did.
Like hardcore.
Absolutely.
I sat next to the principal during lunch and was like, "Can I just sit here?"
Mary got in trouble with the big school bully.
Yes. Everyone, oh, who's the tall volleyball player girl with the orange backpack? Telling you, all the girls in the bathrooms, girl, you're going to die. I don't know you, but you're going to die, girl. Oh, gosh.
Oh, man.
Getting an orange backpack was not a
good
choice.
Allie says, no way Mary would sneak out of bed in the middle of the night.
I mean, let's be real. If I'm already asleep, I probably would sleep through it.
Yeah, guaranteed. Absolutely. Mary has no problem.
I might have a slight narcolepsy problem. Or is it just that I'm very comfortable sleeping? Like, why can't I sleep anywhere?
You can sleep literally anywhere at any time.
Yeah.
Like if I told Mary to fall asleep right now, give her 1 minute, she'll be asleep.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Right here on the table.
It takes me 45 minutes at the least to fall asleep every single night.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. Suzanne says, why do you think they did not include Peeves in the movies?
I think they were able to figure out how to work around him, and it would have just taken time. You have, especially with quick movies, you need to like know the core characters.
Yeah.
And I think too many people would have made it difficult.
In those early days, these films were like an hour 45, hour 50. And for you to get introduced to all of the ghosts, include them in the plot, understand who they are, how they're different from each other. And given the visual aesthetic of the ghosts, they all look the same anyway. So, I could see why they wouldn't do it. Anna asks, Blake, would you duel at midnight? Would I? Yes. Absolutely. Totally. If it made things better for me, or if I had a grudge to get across, yep, I'm absolutely doing it.
I would definitely do if I had a friend. Like if I had a second.
Ellen says, if the films were done from any another character's point of view, who would you have liked to been it from? I'd love to see it from the Draco's point of view.
Yes, that would be great.
That would be interesting, especially as it gets into later films.
I would have liked to see Dumbledore's point of view just because I wanted to know what he was doing this whole time.
You just stole it from me. I was going to say Dumbledore's
Because he does so much. He does so much that we don't know about. We just like skim the surface of. And I think that he's the biggest mystery to me.
Yeah. I was going to say also Snape, but we kind of got that in the end of the series. So it probably wouldn't.
It probably would have been boring. He probably has like a boring hobby.
You think he has a hobby? He doesn't have any hobbies.
I mean, like, what would his hobby be?
Potion making. That's his hobby. That's what he does.
Yeah, old eye.
Like, that or he does something, like, totally off color. Like, he, I don't know, plays basketball. Like, he loves basketball.
Bakes bread.
Yeah. let's see. Would you guys get past the three dogs? Anna asks. No. I would have died.
I would have been so scared.
I would have died. Definitely. Let's see what else we got.
Why do you think they left Neville out of the scene with the three-headed dog scene in the movie? Just once again, I think they're trying to focus on the core three. And in the books, obviously, Neville plays a bigger, you know, a more common character. But I think they just wanted to focus on the trio.
Sure. Caitlin asks, how do you think the story would have gone if it would have been four friends with Neville included in every one of our three heroes are?
I also think that Neville would have, I think Neville's innocence and his frailty would have come off like he was being made fun of the entire time. Mm-hmm. You know, because it kind of feels that way in the books, but I think you're able to skim over a little bit more.
Allison says Snape knits like a fiend. that's it. That's all. Oh, Denise asks, what would your rememberall say?
It would just turn red. And I'd sit there saying, You're not telling me anything, Remember-All.
You suck, Remember-All.
Take it, Malfoy.
All right, yeah, that's it. Let's close this bad boy out. We anticipated this being a short episode.
Yes.
Wrong. It is 54 minutes long so far. So, sorry, everybody. We started the podcast thinking, stuff happens.
It's a simple episode.
But it's fine. We're going to be fine. A half hour at most. I looked down. We hadn't even started half the analysis in 28 minutes.
I mean, for 5 minutes, I was talking about fan fiction.
Yeah, and avoiding flies.
That fly.
It's gonna be a Hall of Fame moment.
Kamikazes on my face.
Oh, man. All right, let's close this bad boy out, shall we?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for tuning in, for listening. Please remember to head on over to your podcast app and give us a rating or a review. It lights us up.
And make sure you go to jointhenerdclan.com if you find there is any value in what we do here at the Potterverse, or if you like just what Mary and I have to offer. Go to jointhenerdclan.com, and for as little as $2 a month, you can become a member there, join all the nerds that are there in that community, and help support what we do here, including the Potterverse, but also Outlander Cast and all things that occur in Mary and Blake Media. So thank you, everybody, and make sure you do get those reviews in for us.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate it. And always make sure that you're signing up for that texting service. You text the number 81010, and then in the message field at Elderwand, @ELDERWAND, and that's how you make sure that you get our complimentary texting reminders to let you know when we are going live.
It's a really good service. I'm not going to lie. I quite like it because it gets you, to know that when we're here, when we're going to be here. And usually we're here every Monday and Wednesday. So if you're listening on the podcast app and you want to see what's going on live, you can do so. Go to Monday and Wednesday, Facebook, or any other major sources of your social media.
Yeah. On that note, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief Managed.